Here, good morning, Glenn.
Oh, good morning. There we go. Yeah, I was trying to get the because when you call, I have to actually call myself. So I have it set up with a
So
two-person call
symbolic.
thing. So because I have you, you're actually calling the radio computer. And then the radio computer
No, I
calls me.
understand.
Although we're sitting right next to each other. So, but anyway, good morning.
There's no distance in truth, is there?
No, and I'm seeing that more and more every day. It's like such a an incredible shift, and there's some reasons for the shift, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that a little bit. But anyway, I want to welcome Bruce Rawls. Good morning, Bruce. Here with me, Lynn Johnson, for the House of the Rising Sun. And the sun is actually rising and actually a little bit above rising here. So that means that we get to have daylight savings time. So we sit in the dark again next week. That's.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes, the way we play with the non-existent dimension of time that we all seem to be enamored with, huh?
Oh, I know. And well, Joan and I were just talking about it because this year is a leap year, and on all the calendars where they actually publish the days, except for the one from the foundation, obviously, they skip the 29th. They don't do a lesson on the 29th when it's a leap year. And so my lessons are all one day off because I don't think Jesus told us when the calendar says leap year, you get to skip a day. So I don't think that's
To
a very
me,
good
it's just it
practice.
just it just seems like just another example of the people's front of Judea versus Judean people's front. If
Yeah.
anybody has seen the Life of Brian, that silly skit, that we just make big deals out of nothing, isn't it? I mean, the whole idea is to focus on the content, not the form, and in this case, the form being fussy about time, but. That's what we came here to do is to be fussy about things, but we can change our purpose for being here to come here to undo
Yeah, we can
instead to
unfuss
do.
ourselves instead of to do.
Unfuss.
Sure.
I like fuss. That's good. That's good. So how
But
about some more FAQs?
I think that's a great idea, and absolutely, if you have one that you think is, I mean, they're so rich. There's so many of them, and they're so rich. And I believe you're still a member of the Disappearance of the Universe Yahoo group, even though you probably
Oh,
don't
yes.
participate a lot. But Marcy Kolath really does a job with going into those FAQs
She
and
does.
bringing up when
Yes.
somebody has an issue. Man, she's like right on it. And right now she's probably the most active of the three of us moderating because she's busily helping people with FAQs from the foundation. So I love it.
Yeah, she's been doing that for years, as have you. Yeah, and a lot of great information on those Yahoo groups, as well as obviously the Facebook groups and forums like this. And it's just amazing how many resources we have, and they're all just reminders, giving form to our desire, and our wish and our will, wish or will, to choose a thought system that reflects what we want to think of ourselves, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's it, what we want. I love that when because it's that what we want that is the whole kicker, We're like little selfish children. But
Well, yeah, it's the that whole prodigal thing, isn't it?
yeah,
Yeah.
it is.
How about FAQ number 1082? Because I think sometimes we make people, because since we started talking about distinctions, this one goes into the distinctions of plants and animals and inanimate objects. That's kind of an interesting one. Should we read that one together?
I'm sure,
It's number
absolutely.
1082. 1082, and the frequently asked questions, or FAQs. In fact, I was thinking we could actually call this program just the facts. At least if we wanted to do nothing but read the FAQs, we could anyway, because there's so much material there. I mean, it's just amazing. There's about 1,300 of them. So even if we read one a week, that would well, let's see, it'd take a few years.
It would take a
Needless to
while,
say, it would
but
take
yeah,
a while. Yeah.
absolutely. So let's
So
see.
1082, if you go to facmoutreach.org or just facim.org, and then look for the supplemental materials. What do they call it? Let me do that so that people can follow along if they want. Facim.org, which
Yeah,
is Foundation for A Course in Miracles. Then you go to Online Learning Aids, and then you go to Question and Answer in the sidebar menu, and then you go to facimoutreach.org. That's how I do it when I don't have it in front of me. And then you go to List of All Questions, the second link at the bottom of the page. And then if you go through the list, they have seven parts. I think this is in part four. 1066. Let's see here. I think 1082 would be in. Let's see. That is in part five, I think. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
because
No, we're in
1081 was there last, I think. Yeah.
Ten. So it'd be part five.
Righty, 1082. All right, I'm just
And
going to post the link in the
okay, all right.
room so people can just go
Okay.
right to it.
Great, great. That's
Although,
good.
putting
So
the path, having them know the path is really important, and that's what we're trying to do is
I think
learn the
that's
path.
helpful too.
But to have the link
Yeah.
direct, you
It's
can either go through the path or you can go direct.
Right. Either way works.
Okay. And this is
So,
really a good question because I'm telling you what, this is something that a lot of people ask about. And there's a whole thing about diets, and there's a whole thing about pets, and there's a whole thing about, all kinds of stuff, and I have a lot of thoughts about it too. So, I'm just going to shut up and let you read. How about that?
Oh, that does, either way, I thought we'd take turns, but whatever works. Why don't we just each read a paragraph? I'll start then if you like.
Okay. Well,
Okay, here's
actually, why don't you
question
just
10.
read the whole question and then we'll go to the answer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then I'll
That
start
sounds
reading
good.
the answer.
Okay, all
That
right.
sounds good. Okay.
Sounds good. Okay. Okay, question number 1082. Again, from the facimoutreach.org, the frequently asked questions. I'm wondering what A Course in Miracles has to say about the consciousness of plants and animals and perhaps even inanimate objects. I find the whole issue quite distressing. Nature red in tooth and claw, in quotes, and wonder if plants feel pain when picked, cut, eaten, etc. I've always been a nature lover and I am passionately concerned about ecology, preservation of biodiversity, etc. I'm also considering taking up gardening as a career. Yet I feel deeply conflicted because in creating better habitats, I'm allowing more plants, animals, bugs, etc. to come into the world and suffer pain, and also inflicting pain on the invader species I remove. I'm very confused on the whole issue, and I find a lack of explicit guidelines in A Course in Miracles. It is all very well to say the world is a dream. Such an argument would allow for all kinds of monstrous evil to be committed by to humans, plants, animals alike. But saying it is not real does not help. The only thing that is real at this very moment is what is actually being experienced, not what would be experienced if it were not for the veil of illusion. I am not alone in this. The Jain religion takes the practice of not harming anything to extremes. Some Jains wear masks over their faces to avoid inhaling insects, bugs, etc., and lightly brush the road before them to avoid treading on living creatures. I sometimes feel I ought to be doing the same thing, and certainly not inflicting pain on millions of blades of grass with a mower or injecting rhododendrons with poison to prevent them from spreading and destroying the countryside. Yet I do want to preserve, enhance the countryside. Oh, yeah. Do I want to preserve / enhance the countryside when it is a killing field?
Woo,
a lot of stuff there to cover.
It's like, well, just kill yourself now. Oh, wait a minute. You know, if I slit my throat, there's billions of little blood cells that are going to just wink out and die, and billions of little cells and creatures inside of me, but the biota in my intestines, that all these things are going to just be destroyed. If there's nothing crazy. I mean, but people do think people become obsessed with this, which it sounds like this person is kind of obsessed. So interesting, huh?
Well, I think we all do to a degree, and it's just, and it's all, again, you know, the to the degree that we make our identity one of being separate from perfect oneness, to that same degree, we use the world as a mechanism. It, you know, it merely reflects our wish to be the vehicle or the mechanism by which the thought system of sin, guilt, fear, death, and grievances and destruction, you know, takes form. So anyway, I'll go ahead and read the first paragraph, and then you can join in. How's that sound?
Okay. That sounds good.
Answer. One of the major teachings of the Course is that all sons are the same, equal in content, not form. And Jesus is not speaking exclusively about Homo sapiens when he uses the term Son of God. And so from this perspective, he tells us that even the smallest grain of sand is part of the sonship. Seeing qualitative differences, therefore, means one's mind has merged with the ego. So there's our belief in differences again, isn't it? We think that there's something different between an electron in my fingernail or an electron in a volcano in another galaxy, you know, or whatever, you know. Pick anything from the smallest to the largest. We think that somehow in the realm of form, of space and time and bodies and things and stuff, matter and energy, we think that there's differences. And within the context of where we believe we are, we need to work with that. And we need to express our kindness, but however best we can. But we're not get so obsessive over it that we forget the metaphysics behind it. I think that's what this is probably going to go into in more detail. Do you want to read the next one?
Sure. And just to say that, you know, this, go back to those miracle principles and the very first one, that there's no order of difficulty in miracles. One is not harder or bigger than another. They are all the same. All expressions of love are maximal. So it basically, what he's saying here is that there's no difference between me and this keyboard. As far as the physical being that is here, there's no difference between anything, and it's all an expression of love, and it is all maximal. And then also, I was looking for the one that says that the sonship is the sum of all creation. So, you know, and you may argue about what is creation, but you can't exclude anything from it, so because it's God's creation. So where we may have turned it into something else through our will to be separate, and therefore made it necessary to have a computer to talk to Bruce today because I appear to be in Colorado and he appears to be in California, and all the other mechanisms that go into place to make this possible, that really is what is the Course calls an attack on God, is saying that you and I can be separated to the extent that we cannot have direct conscious communication with each other because we put so many barriers between us. And you don't look at the computer and say, this is a barrier between me and you. And yet it is the thing that is making it possible for us to be apart from each other. I mean, these are the things.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, that's a perfect example of how we can use anything as either a reflection of the purpose that ego uses to separate, or that Holy Spirit, aka Jesus of the Course, aka our inner kindness teacher, whatever label we want to use for that, thought that we took dream to get back out, that thought system uses to return us to the mindfulness of the oneness that we never left. And it does that through undoing the belief in separation by reminding us gently and kindly that we can indeed see everything as a reflection of shared interest rather than separate interest. And that, as we talked about last week, the shared interest becomes a shared identity over time as we let go of the differences and the wanting to make the differences a big deal. I think that's kind of like ties into that part of the Course where it says, you know, is the Course, and I'm going to paraphrase this greatly, but it's basically the Course is saying the idea isn't to not see bodies. It's to not see each other condemned, not see each other sinful, not see each other guilty. And if we can remember that is the liberating, that's climbing up the right ladder again. That's basically getting back on Holy Spirit's ladder and saying, oh, I can use every little seeming thing, every little bug, plant, animal, keyboard, collection of molecules in whatever form it seems to take.
Yes. And this is something really important, I think, because normally I do not associate any kind of relationship with people or animals or anything with attack or desire to separate. And mm-hmm, yet, mm-hmm. What you just said about the, let me not see, not see my brother as a body, but, you know, not to see him as separate outside of myself or capable of attack or being attacked. And you don't even recognize how much you do this. And I'm going to say me. I don't recognize how much I do this. But, you know, we had a winter retreat here in Colorado up at Canyon City. A lot of people came. Well, not a lot of people. Only 34 people could come. Anyway, people came. And some of the people who came to the retreat, I didn't, and I just woke up in the night and just knew I wasn't supposed to be there, so I didn't go. Some people who came were sick. They had the flu. Other people who came were well. They didn't have the flu. Guess what happened after all those people went home who had been well? I have any real count of it, but most everybody I've talked to went home and got sick because they came upon a form of attack that they may not have even recognized was in their own minds an attack on them. You know, when you got your badge from the guy who was hacking and coughing, and you know, you put it around your neck, you've picked up all those everything that was being hacked and coughed. You know, you're carrying it around, you're breathing the air. Just the presence of another person, another body in a room is potential for attack. And people, you know, you're talking about people wearing protective masks or whatever, so that they don't, you know, breathe the air, or they don't spread their germs or whatever. That's the kind of thing that, you know, it is not even conscious on our part that we are perceiving our brother as being here to attack us, and that we would leave a conference where we had just learned all about a lot of stuff that was not attack, and go home and say, dang that guy, he had that sickness and now I'm sick. I've been attacked. And not only that, I attacked everybody on the airplane as I was flying back home, everybody in the airport, everybody I've come in contact with. You know, I'm just like a Typhoid Mary here. That's kind of obvious when you start looking at it. But other things you don't even notice, you're perceiving yourself as being attacked. You know, maybe like when you and I are talking, you start to talk and I start to talk at the same time. in a way, even though There's no intention on anybody's part to do that. That's a little duel going on. There, you can't live in this world the way it is and not attack or be attacked, because that's the whole mechanism. That's how it's made. And it's not just the attack, it's the guilt that comes from that. Because,
and that's the core of the purpose, isn't it?
That's it.
That's the essence of the purpose of the ego, is to basically to foment guilt, to foster guilt, and yet to deny it by projecting it out, and in denying the insane thought system by making it seem like everything else outside oneself, all the animate and inanimate things, which we've just been talking about, are the cause of, you know, if we're at the victim of or at the mercy of something else, then we're basically saying separation is real and differences are important. And what you're just talking about, the episode with the people coming together, and you know, some of them deciding perhaps on an unconscious level to adopt the ailments or whatever of whoever was there. It kind of reminded me of one of Ken Wapnick's audios I was listening to the other day, and he was talking about how his wife Gloria, I guess, had got a cold or flu or something like that, and at one point he reaches over and gives her a kiss or a hug or something, and she says, "Aren't you worried about getting my sickness?" And he responds with, you know, aren't you concerned about getting my wellness?
Yes.
So, you know, it's like, well, you know, it all depends on, again, what's the motive? And it really, I think it revolves around, you know, the importance we put on bodies again. And that importance is just a reflection of wanting to see something outside myself responsible for my peace of mind, or more importantly, lack of it. And that's the whole game of the ego. That's its only modus operandi. So when we catch ourselves in the act of that, making a big deal out of those specifics, and it's not to suggest that, you know, we would, you know, go around and hang out in the most infectious ward of a hospital, you know, and shake everybody's hand and give them kisses and you know, do that sort of thing. You know, if that's our belief system, it's probably best to avoid people who are actively contagious, you know, on a biological level. But at the same time, I think the idea being that if we can ask ourselves, well, what is it for? What am I using anything for? Am I using it as a way to make wrong, or am I using whatever I'm involved in as a way to you know, be a mechanism or a vehicle of kindness? And that can be a really pivotal decision at any given moment, as you know, what am I using it for? What is it for? That's what the Course asking.
That's right. What is it for? And purpose. Purpose is meaning.
Exactly.
So what That's is it. The purpose? You know, what is the purpose mm-hmm. of it? And, mm-hmm. You know, if obviously no one goes to anything with the intention or purpose of making anybody else sick or upset, or, you know, I wouldn't say no one. Some people may. Who knows? But with the intention of making other people sick. And yet if you go, and maybe, you know, someone who went had an illness they didn't know, and the second day they came down full blown with the flu or something, and they knew that they had, this is me, my modus operandi. If I knew that I had exposed a lot of people to something that was considered a serious illness, and then later on found out that those people got really sick, or, you know, God forbid, even died, guess who thinks they're responsible for all of that? And right. And that's guilt again. You know, that I've come up with three little phrases, or three little watchwords that uh-huh. really stand me when I get into this level confusion thing, which this is what it is. It's a level confusion thing.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Is the script is written.
Mm-hmm.
I need do nothing, and I am perfectly cared for in all situations. So just knowing that I'm not responsible for the world I see, you know, as far as, you know, of course I'm responsible for, you know, my own side of it, but the world I see is not even, it's an illusion. And so I'm not responsible for the illusion. I'm responsible for believing the illusion over the truth. Because yes. The illusion is there. The script is written. The illusion is there. And it's my decision whether I'm going to buy into it and suffer the guilt and fear that comes from that, or I'm going to look at it, recognize that it is not real, and allow my mind to be restored to sanity and freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you just said, I think, is a pivotally important point. Is we're not as responsible for the script and that what and for trying to fix everything on the level of form, because we made that up collectively on a level beyond our conscious awareness. So to attempt to become responsible for the dream, including to attempt to make the world work for us in the way that we want it to work as egos, is obviously a losing battle, and one that was designed to be lost. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that we're responsible for, that as to echo what you just said, is which thought system we're choosing at any given moment. Not only can we do that, but we always are doing that moment to moment, 24/7, 365, every single nanosecond, every single moment. We're choosing one of two thought systems. And it's like we have this master knife switch in the mad scientist lab in our mind. And we, you know, if you remember the Frankenstein switches, you know, that you turn on the juice and bring the monster to life. Well, that's kind of, you know, we're basically, all the course is asking us to do is to throw that switch in the off position for the ego. And the piece that's there that is not animated by an insane thought system just shuts off. It's basically, it really, it, in a sense, it doesn't go away immediately, obviously, because, you know, we have the echoes of that as the script plays out around us. But what gets shut off is our identification with it. Our identity is no longer married or wedded to the idea that we have to be at the mercy of something outside. We're no longer the victim of our own Frankenstein monster of the ego when we look at it with the Holy Spirit, when we see how crazy it is, when we see its insanity, and just notice moment to moment, it's like, wow, this is not working for me. This idea of foisting my unconscious guilt onto somebody else or something else or some groups of things or people or inanimate objects isn't cutting it. And why would I continue to do that when I have those lucid moments and see how non-productive, non-effective, and just totally insane that approach is? But we come by that gradually, it seems, and I think fortunately we're blessed with a system because of the grace and the beauty of the Holy Spirit's thought system. We get to do that at our own pace, on our own time, in our own way, on our own terms. But like the beginning part of I was re-listening to that 2-hour documentary about A Course in Miracles that's been out for decades. And that's the second part I don't remember hearing very much. But anyway, I'm going to find that again and watch it because there's a lot in there. But there is that part in there where early on it says this is a required course. And that was one of the things that Ken Wapnick said, that they wish they had, you know, put a footnote or something at least, or, you know, done something to remind people that it's not required in the sense that the form is required, but the content of the course is really, you know, throwing that knife switch, making that switch in the mind between the two thought systems, and eventually locking it in the shared interest position, and that takes us all the way home.
Exactly. And I like that this is a required course. And people will come to the point like we are here now in Awakening Together, where, you know, we've got basically bringing any kind of non-dual thought system into place and finding out that a lot that are advertised as non-dual really are not at all. Mm-hmm. But to bring these non-dual thought systems, there's only one. And when you see it, you recognize it's exactly the same thing. What A Course in Miracles is teaching me is the same thing that Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche taught me, the same thing that Alan Watts taught me, same thing that Joel Goldsmith taught me. It really is exactly the same thing. And the thing that is so beautiful, though, about the Course, I mean, so you can do any of them and you'll still get there. The thing that I find so beautiful about the Course is that Jesus really takes us to look at the underlying guilt that is what is overwhelming our ability to even make a conscious good choice. And so the question this questioner has asked about, you know, I feel bad about the blades of grass when I'm cutting the lawn. I feel bad about, you know, all these things that, you know, ants and breathing in germs and, you know, killing, you know, I mean, what does this person eat? How does this person live? If you're feeling horribly guilty about your every action, and yet, guess what? You are. If you're not looking at it and recognizing the guilt that you feel, and me personally, I can attest to this. You know, I feel guilt about every single thing that I do. I feel guilt about, you know, things that I'm eating, not because they're bad for me, but because, you know, there are starving children in the world. You know, I mean, that's a real basic one, but there are many other guilts that are just as, they're all equal, that are still running scripts in my mind about, you know, GMOs and you know, underpaid, overworked farmers and, you know, I mean, slave labor. All these things are going on that are an undercurrent to every thought that we have. So you can't, you know, some people post things about, you know, animal cruelty or whatever it is, you can't get away from it. If you are living in this world, you cannot get away from feeling guilt for the things that you have to have essentially to live. So,
even breatharians are killing, like you were talking about earlier, thousands of microbes every second. You know, probably millions just with each breath. You know, that we're.
Exactly.
Countless numbers are being destroyed with each breath. You know, obviously they're regenerating in some fashion, but they're also being destroyed. So, you know, you can't get away from it. But the take home lesson is that if we can look at the underlying guilt, and, you know, find joy in a joyless place because we realize that our identity isn't there. That's the key, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And not only is our identity not there, it's all something that we made up. I made it up, and I can choose to let it go. Even to know our relationship to everything that is, you know, apparently in this universe, to know that, you know, I can't breathe without something, you know, billions of light years away being affected by it. Everything we do affects everything else because it's all kind of that fabric of space time that we made out of, you know, perfect oneness, which is the whole idea of duality came from that. But,
it's a pretty dysfunctional cloth, isn't it? That
it is. Yeah, it's totally, totally. But it also, you know, it does hold together to a point where you can actually live in it, work in it, manipulate it, whatever. But just knowing that, you know, I made it up and I'm doing, you know, doing all this, it can also make me feel guilty, and can also make me. I mean, it doesn't. It's a choice.
We can't win, can we? Not for, that's why there's no way out of it from within the ego's thought system. It's foolproof, as Jesus says, but it's not God-proof, fortunately. Another thing that ties into it before we get back to the reading is I was thinking about Gary Renard's wonderful exercise that he has in his Fearless Love audio, which is to begin to remember to whenever you look at another person, and this would also apply to any, you know, seemingly inanimate thing, you know, bug, a blade of grass, whatever, you know, any keyboard, any specific thing, is that really can be a symbol of seeing all of spirit. So if we can remember that each seeming individual, each seeming separate thing is really all of spirit in masquerade form, and then we realize that all of spirit is in my mind, and that we can use that exercise to bring us back to mindfulness of recognizing that there's nothing outside me, there's nothing outside you, there's only the oneness, and anything that appears to be different, and that's why it's a purely non-dual curriculum, as you were pointing out, is such an important idea to remember to bring ourselves gently but firmly back to as often as we can, and eventually that awareness will lock in, and we won't feel any interest or any desire to want to see differences, because the motivation, the purpose of it, will have finally been dissipated, and we will have played it out in whatever way we felt we needed to. Yes. And we'll say, okay, I'm done with that. Yeah, enough of that silliness.
And then you actually do begin to see a world of sameness. Exactly. And you can actually embrace everything as, you know, I can be joyful and grateful, you know, walking on the grass. Yeah. And knowing that the grass is me, it's all, it's not separate from me. It's not something outside of me. Right. And even this body, which this really cracked me up. I got this realization the other day, and it's just so overwhelming. even this body that I think is, you know, me represented, is actually billions and billions of tiny little creatures. And each one of them is a son of God with its own autonomy as a son of God. Each one of them is exactly the same thing that I think I am. Blood cells, mitochondria, you know.
Right, right. As you're saying that, I was thinking, well, the cell, what a great reminder, because it can be a jail cell, if you will. Each cell of the quintillions of cells, or however many there are in each body, is either a prison or a classroom, and so the scale doesn't matter. We just happen to typically identify with a blob of protoplasm of, you know, blood and guts and bone and sinew and all that stuff that we think of as a specific body, but there's really no reason why we couldn't identify with, you know, half of a painting on the wall and then a piece of the sheetrock next to it. I mean, why are we so fixated on one specific thing? You know, it could be everything, or anyway, yeah. It's just kind of crazy that the arbitrariness of form and
of what we select to be identified with, and we select to be identified with this thing, which is really a colony of living beings that are each in their own. On their own, they're each individual things, of course, just equally as dependent on everything else around them as we seemingly are. But if I looked at it that way, and I could actually just see that what it is that I think I am is absolutely not what I think I am. And this is why, you know, a lot of people get confused about these Eastern teachings that say, concentrate on the I am, concentrate on the I am. So they think that you're supposed to concentrate on what I am, but really it's concentrate on what I think I am. And everything that is not what I think I am, I reject. And so when I'm doing that, if I'm saying I am a woman, I am sitting in a chair, I'm living in a world, I'm talking to Bruce, I'm all of, every single bit of that is untrue. It's all error. And so if I could just look at everything and just reject everything that was untrue that I believe with my whole heart right now to be true, then, you know, I would actually begin to see a reality of what is. But, you know, as long as I'm identifying myself as this one thing, and even negating the billions of things that it really is, and giving it no, you know, really honestly, to, you know, cut your fingernails you know, every single one of those things, it doesn't change it from being what it, the truth of what it is. It just makes me think something, it's something different. So it's the what I think, what I believe is real and true. And when you start letting that go, it starts splitting. I mean, everything starts splitting apart. And that's what I've been seeing. Yeah, why not? Why am I not identified with the chair that my butt is sitting in? Why do I call it my butt? I'm not that. You know, anyway, so I'm going to go on to the next paragraph because it's really basically saying a lot of what we're just already saying. But as horrifying as it may be to acknowledge this, and for those who just came in the room, I'm going to post where we're at. We're in the FAQ number 1082 from the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. And so you can go there and follow. Yeah, Adele says netty netty. Exactly. Not the that. That's what it is. So as horrifying as it may be to acknowledge this, if you look carefully, you will see that the entire world is a killing field. What level does not share somehow in the ego genome of kill or be killed, and one or the other? Where is there growth and survival that does not come at another's expense? Root systems, insects, marine life, microorganisms, corporations, governments, defense systems. What can survive without feeding off another? What is there that is needed for our survival that is not also potentially harmful or lethal? To say nothing of limited. Granted, there are examples of stunning beauty, selflessness, and helpfulness, but if you scratch beneath the surface, are not most instances of beauty tinged with pain or vulnerability? And I don't know why they say most, because it's all instances.
Well,
Everything.
that's just a gentle introduction for those of us who still have our pet grievances and our pet specialness idols that we and which I think we could, if we're honest with ourselves, would say all of us, you know, that we're still working on. Otherwise, we wouldn't need this curriculum, right?
Exactly. So, are not most instances of selflessness marked by sacrifice? Are not most forms of helpfulness limited? And this is, oh man, sacrifice and limitation. And yes, the instances of selflessness always comes with a, I mean, again, all the guilt. That is underlying all these thoughts. And I'm just getting to be a fanatic about guilt because I recognize it just when I see it, it's so subconscious to me that it's a surprise when I see what I'm really feeling guilty about and how I'm really feeling guilty and every single thing that I'm reading here. You know, yep, you know. But took my little grandson out for a walk and he noticed ants and you know they're getting active in the sun and so he's fascinated and he's two and a half, so he stops and he just looks and looks and looks, you know, and it's cute. He was saying whittlebees, whittlebees, and I'm like, no, they're ants, whittlebees. I'm like, no, they're ants. He goes, little bees. He thought they were little bees. And he was real fascinated by, but very carefully walking, and if we saw one, to avoid stepping on one, you know, because, you know, why would we want to step on an ant on purpose, even though in my lifetime I've stepped on millions of them probably and purposely. So
Oh, no, Lynn, what a
I know.
confession.
I was an evil killer. Still am, you know. I mean, I still, you know, if a mouse comes in my house, I'm putting out a trap.
Well, I think that points to another topic that I think the remaining paragraphs I'm sure we'll go into, but you know, the idea that, you know, that the ego's thought system is a murderous thought system because at its cold, cruel heart is the belief that we murdered God, and so the only thing that we can do in its insanity is to try to murder everything else that we projected outside of ourselves in a crazed attempt to try to fend off and ward off the retribution. you know, that we think is the inevitable retaliative attack that's going to come back to us. And as long as we think that we, you know, which is the foundation of the unconscious, you know, guilt, is that we think that there's some, the other shoe is going to drop, the sword of Damocles is going to fall, and we're going to be at the mercy again of something coming back to us, whether it's a flu bug at a retreat, or it's a letter from the IRS, or a bad news on the TV about the weather, or you know, it's an offhand comment that someone makes about us that we don't like, or you know, it could be countless things. It could be a gazillion things that we're either afraid of or think that we're at the mercy of, and all those are just our classroom to look at what's going on in our unconscious mind, projected out perfectly, mirroring exactly what we need to forgive at any given moment. And that's the real beauty of it. The real beauty is that we get a perfect opportunity to take the fast track of shifting our identity by looking at everything that seems to be outside of us, and including the body that we think we are, which is a part of that same projection, and recognize that is just a reflection of a decision to take a mad idea seriously, and exactly. And we can choose against that.
Exactly, and that, of course, with the whole thing being that, you know, once I recognize I decided that, then I have two choices. You know, I can either decide differently, or I can anguish myself over the decision and continue with the guilt. And the way that the ego works with that then is that if I'm believing I'm guilty, I'm going to want to destroy every witness to that guilt. I want to hide it. And so this is what I do throughout my life. I'm out, you know, trying to destroy the witnesses to my guilt.
Burn the evidence.
Get rid of the evidence. Yeah. but you know, I think what every criminal who's ever actually perpetrated any kind of a crime has discovered after, you know, whatever they've done to try to deny it, that admitting to it and looking at it and then going about trying to correct it or allow it to be corrected is a huge relief. Mm-hmm. You know, to go my whole life feeling guilty. And, you know, you've read stories of, you know, somebody murdered somebody 30 years ago and finally come clean about it, you know, because they couldn't live with themselves for that. But we're doing that every day. In every single thing that we're doing, we're hiding our guilt, trying to hide our guilt from ourselves, having that deep, uncomfortable and depressed feeling, covering it up through whatever we do, entertainment, watching movies, drugs, alcohol, you know, eating. It's all, everything is a defense against the truth. And as Dove had posted earlier, sickness is a defense against the truth. And every defense we have against the truth is a sickness or a symptom of a sickness. Right. And it's looking at that and realizing I don't have to defend myself against what's true. I can face the truth, and it's not going to destroy me. It's just going to get rid of that alter ego.
Yeah. And facing the truth is really just facing what we made as a barrier to the truth. It's facing the fact in the dream of that we made up an incredibly elaborate system to hide from the kindness and the love and the peace that is our birthright that we never left. And we're so far down the rabbit hole that we've forgotten that we couldn't possibly get rid of that if we wanted to. But we believe that we wanted to because we believe that we threw God under the bus. We blew up perfect oneness somehow. We offed God. And in that just silly, silly fantasy, we think that we swap roles as victim and victimizer, and we need to, you know, just gently forgive those things by looking at the guilt. And like to what you say is so important, Lynn, it is we need to continually but gently, at our own rate, you know, but consistently pull ourselves back to mindfulness and see where we've been using guilt as a motivating factor, and just say, nope, not this time. Yeah.
Exactly.
Should I read the next paragraph?
Yeah, go ahead and read the next paragraph.
Okay. Given its
order. You know, if we need to go over a little bit to finish up, it's fine with me.
Sure. Yeah, okay. Me too. Okay. Given its origin in the ego's vicious and defiant intent to produce an existence totally apart from God's kingdom of love and oneness, we're just talking about, how could the world be anything other than this? It was made as an attack. And it references in part two of the workbook, lesson number three. And since ideas leave not their source, another reference to workbook lesson 132, it simply replicates the thought that owns it. So, if we think that ideas can leave their source, which is the second shield of oblivion, that space, time, individuality, all those seeming differences, are there in a universe with all these fearful things, that's really nothing more than a reflection of the guilt, which is the inner shield of oblivion, the inner shield of defense, that tries to keep us mindless. Okay, therefore, Jesus teaches, seek not to change the world, but choose to change your mind about the world. Perception is a result and not a cause. So we got the arrow backwards. We think that the arrow goes from everything outside of us, us being a body or an individuality that has a body, you know, mind with a body, if we're a little more lucid within the ego's dream. but we think that all those things we're at the mercy of, instead of turning it around and realizing everything we see is a reflection of one of those two choices of thought systems. The problem, though, is that we have identified with the ego's version of reality to such an extent that we have no sense of ourselves as minds always deciding to uphold this attack on truth. Mind, every time I now open the book, which I'm referring to as A Course in Miracles, is the book, I try to remember that this is about mind. This has nothing to do with behavior or form or space or time or, you know, the seeming individuality. It's addressing, this entire course is pitched to a mind that is beginning to become aware of itself, and to that pure awareness that says, I somehow think I was able to choose duality. I believe that this insane, mad, murderous thought system was possible, and that I made up a whole universe to reinforce it and to keep me nightmarishly stuck in it. Okay. To protect its system itself, the ego has us focus entirely on form, believing there is a hierarchy of values and beings, which leads to what Jesus calls the first law of chaos. And that's from chapter 23, section 2. And then the laws of chaos go into great detail, of course. The hierarchy, just to kind of tie back into the question, in this FAQ, is the idea that, you know, that, for example, that we sometimes believe that microbes are not as important as bugs, which are not important as you know, or plants, let's say, you know, which aren't as important as the animal kingdom, which is not as important as the human kingdom, you know, and that's, you know, sort of the implied ethic of a lot of our, you know, natural resource conservation, you know, kind of thinking. And again, why wouldn't we try to do what's, you know, the most kind on the level of form, but to shift the identity and our awareness from thinking that we and quote others are form, to one of we are mind, we're all the same mind, and that sameness, that sharedness of purpose, of waking up from that dream, is really what really truly unites us. Because we can't really merge on the level of form, you know, despite our amorous intents at times to or wanting to get together and be with other people, you know, if it's you know, whether it's a, you know, a romantic or an unromantic engagement, you know, we think that somehow being under the same roof or in proximity even with you know, people in a certain neighborhood or part of the world, you know, somehow gives us some advantage. Well, how could it be if space and time is a dream. Okay. We think that what we perceive is reality. Thus, we become obsessed with defending what we judge as good and worthwhile against what we judge as bad or threatening. In the process of becoming totally confused and frustrated, as we intuitively sense that the situation is hopeless. Well, yeah, the ego's situation is hopeless. And all because we have lost sight of the total picture that an illusion is an illusion is an illusion.
Yep.
Illusion A is illusion B is illusion C. And yet we make these vast hierarchies of differences and preferences and you know, specialness galore. And when we catch ourselves doing that, to not beat ourselves up, but just say, oh, there I go again. I'm making a big deal about, you know, this situation being better than that situation. Living with this person versus that person is better or worse, you know, living in this part of the country or eating this kind of food or whatever, you know, or it could go on and on.
Or voting for Donald Trump or not.
Or Bernie Sanders or whoever.
Someone gooder from, you know, it's interesting, Bruce, that what came to mind here as you were reading this. This is, you know, I've been in other religious studies where there was a rationalization that went on about, for instance, what we eat or how we live or what we use. And the rationalization is that, and I think this maybe have come from Augustine, St. Augustine or something, that or maybe it was the Buddha, who knows, is that everything ascends to God through us. Because we are such an elevated creature that the grass becomes God when we eat the grass, or when we eat the cow that ate the grass, the cow becomes God because it's filtered through our divinity to become one with God. So, you know, and there's okay, there is.
Level of confusion.
Serious level of confusion going on there. All right.
Because as you're saying that, I was thinking, pardon the interruption, I just couldn't help laughing. When you eat the grass or you eat the whatever, you know, so I was thinking, well, if you look at the cow pies or what's in the toilet, you know, it's like, well, that's really where form ends up is back in that recycling dump, you know.
But trying to become ascended again, you know, it's going to go back and recycle, and you're going to, you know, and exactly what you said, level confusion. And that's what this is saying. Illusion is an illusion is an illusion. One part of an illusion is no value more valuable than another. There's no order of difficulty in miracles. That's exactly what that's saying, is that it's all the same. It's all the same. And, you know, you can say that all you want, and people will say, well, yeah, but I'm not the same as, you know, the dog that's out in the front yard. Yes, you are. That dog is no different than you. It's nothing, because it is all, either it's all God or it's not God at all. You know, in the reality of it is, it's all God. It can't be anything else. So, you know, that and was something that, you know, I don't want to, you know, get too carried away here, but Course in Miracles students do not really observe or call out or help each other when they are suffering level confusion. And, you know, when Jesus says it just takes one person who is in their right mind to help bring another person into their right mind, I would think that this, my thinking anyway, and my intention is to try as consistently as possible to be thinking from that right mind. And when I hear, of course, that all has to do with my hearing too, other Course in Miracles students who are, you know, doing all this level confusion, really it doesn't serve them to agree with them when they're doing that. It doesn't serve anybody to agree with error. Not to be that we're here to correct the error, but to you know, just maybe know in my own mind. Right, I don't even have to say anything.
And that's part of the three R's of forgiveness, to reveal, release, and replace. Is the first part of the revelation, the first step in the three R's is to reveal, this is my projection. When I, you know, whether it's a, quote, another Course student, not unquote, or anyone else or anything else, to recognize this is whatever I'm experiencing on the level of form is a reflection of my mind, of a choice for one of two thought systems at any given moment. And if I'm not at peace, I could choose peace instead of this. And that's the thought system that I need to drop in order to return to that thought system, which I've really never left. I need to drop my involvement and identification with the other. And that's where the release comes in. And then what's the truth that's behind it will be revealed, which is the third R. And it's so simple. And yet we complicate the heck out of it, don't we? Because we're invested in making it about in a dualistic way and in a way that perpetuates differences. We're making it about, you know, what others have done to us, and that we think that we need to step in and correct. But like you say, Lynn, all it takes is the willingness to see, oh, this is part of my awareness. And if I hold without necessarily saying a word, depending on the circumstance, and in some circumstances you might want to say something, but it's not required, other than to just remember that this is something that I have made as a result of a decision for a belief in separation, or aka sickness, as the Course would refer to it, and that decision can be undone at any moment by recognizing that I'm not at the mercy of the world I see. I'm not the victim of the world I see. Yeah,
I can choose differently.
Yeah,
and the Holy Spirit will, if I allow Him, change those thoughts. I mean, that, and it's not like it's somebody outside of me doing it. It's my right. own internal knowing, my own internal teacher that will change that thinking if I will allow it. And mm-hmm. so it is a matter of allowance. I'm going to go on to the next paragraph. Let's see. So fortunately, there is a solution, and it does not require that you deny what you are seeing and experiencing. Jesus is the loving presence in our minds who helps us to get back in the same part of our minds where we can recall the steps that led us into this depressing state and then choose to begin the process of healing by looking at everything differently. This means seeing our lives as a classroom and all our relationships and interactions as the curriculum Jesus can use to restore our minds to their natural state of peace and oneness. The world will continue to be what it is. You know, that we're not changing the script. The script is written. The world will continue to be what it is. But mm-hmm. because our perspective will be different, our perception will change. We thus can learn to use our body and the world for this purpose by changing the teacher in our minds from the ego to Jesus or the Holy Spirit. Any role you choose in the world can serve this purpose. And this purpose alone is what would give your life meaning. That the thought system in your mind is the problem, not the world. Why would you allow the world, made to conceal your true identity, to tell you who you are and what your purpose should be? Man, that is just so powerful, because it doesn't matter what you do in the world. You can be a rock star. You can be a jewel thief. You can be a soldier. You can be a mother. You can be an artist. You can be a guru. You can be any of those things. Just don't be fooled into thinking that that's what you are. You're playing a part. It's a role in a movie.
I guess I never thought of being a jewel thief as a typical career path, but maybe for some people it is.
I don't know why I thought of that either, but it's true.
It just struck me funny. What you do. It's like, Mom, I think I'm going to be a jewel thief when I grow up. Yeah. Anyway, it's just tickled my funny bone. Yeah, no, it really doesn't. It really doesn't. Not that we necessarily are endorsing that, but.
But if it's the path, if it's the role yep. that's in the script, you know, you don't, you're the actor, you go to make the movie and the director says, well, in this movie, you're going to be the jewel thief. And you say, well, I don't believe in thievery and therefore I shall not steal a jewel in this movie. No, that ain't going to happen.
I think what that actually ties into beautifully, and I'm glad you said that, because all those things that we think of as despicable, you know, if you want to call them careers, ways of living, you know, are no different, because it's another example of form and content and level confusion. They're no different whatsoever from the killing field of that this FAQ addresses, which is the idea that somehow one or the other, that there's someone else who suffers at my expense or vice versa. As long as there's an either or instead of a both and, that's if there's any single person, place, thing, stuff that's left out of perfect oneness, then, and again, that addresses the entire realm of the fabric of space-time, then we're basically saying that you know, ego's right, and you know, that insanity must reign over everything, because then there's no place for recognizing in that thought system anyway that we could include everyone, and the kindness doesn't have to necessarily take a form that seems to be sanctioned, although often it will. It doesn't have to necessarily, and we may be motivated to do something that would seem crazy at times, but in the larger context, you know, it would make sense. In other words, we might I can't think of a good example at the moment, but there may be things that to an outside observer would look nuts, but in the bigger picture would be something that fulfills a greater awareness. And again, that's probably just my level of confused mind that's trying to make sense out of what.
Oh yeah, because it sounds like you're judging the circumstance, or you're thinking that one thing is better than another.
Right.
And, we had a quote yesterday. Our quote of the day was from Eckhart Tolle, or Tolle, or however you say his name, and it was, "What really matters is not what function you fulfill in this world, but whether you identify with your functions to such an extent that it takes over and becomes the role that you play." Mm-hmm. When you play roles, you are unconscious.
Right.
And that's it. When I think I'm the function, you know, the role that I'm playing is what I really am, then I'm unconscious.
Right. If we're unconscious, it means we've identified with the figure on the screen, the dream figure, rather than the actor or the puppet or whatever, rather than the spectator in the audience, or more accurately, the ultimate level, probably maybe an intermediate level, is the projectionist in the projection room. But ultimately, we're the choreographer, the director, the producer, we're all those things, but we're none of those specific things ultimately. But did we finish that paragraph that starts fortunately?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I'll read the next one then.
Okay.
A Course in Miracles is a spiritual path. As a spiritual path, teaches that there is no way out of conflict and hopelessness, unless we are open to the idea that we are choosing what we want to be real in our perception. And then there's a large quote from Chapter 21, Section 5, Paragraph 1, and it starts as, "Perception selects and makes the world you see. It literally picks it out as the mind directs. Perception is a choice and not a fact. But on this choice depends far more than you may realize as yet. For on the voice you choose to hear and on the sights you choose to see depends entirely your whole belief in what you are." There's the identity. "Perception is a witness but to this and never to reality. Yet it can show you the conditions in which awareness of reality is possible, or those where it could never be." And the latter, of course, is where we, if we're honest with ourselves, spend most of our time. But if we can catch ourselves saying, "Oh, I was mindless again," to be gentle with ourselves and just say, "Oh yeah, that doesn't serve me. If I'm making a big deal out of cannibalizing another life form, you know, whether it's animal, vegetable, or mineral, or whatever, you know, it's like, oh yeah, if I am gentle and kind with myself, it's going to reflect in the optimal way with everything around me, and I'll most importantly realize that there isn't anything around me, that it's all within me. And anyway, do you want to read the last paragraph?
Sure. I posted that paragraph in the room, because it really is just what I choose. So, This is a radical teaching, Pia. Without question, it overturns everything we have learned in the world, and it therefore threatens the foundation of our self-concept and our lives. And it seems the only people who are receptive to its are those who have tried other approaches and found them inadequate, or have thrown up their hands in desperation and have cried out, "There must be a better way." Mm-hmm. And that's true, you know. It's not because you get to that point. It's that you recognize that every single one of your options did not pan out, not work. Every solution I've come up with did not work. And you can look at the lifetimes, if you wanted to, you know, extrapolate backward in time, which, you know, we know is a fantasy, but, you know, people still talk about when I was, you know, when I was Cleopatra, I did this. When I
that's
was,
the quintessential one, right?
Yeah, you know, whatever. that every single one of those was an attempt to prove that God was wrong. Mm-hmm. Every single lifetime is an attempt to prove that God doesn't know what he's doing. And you know what? I've gotten through how many, I have no idea, because I don't, you know, I don't think of individual persons ever being a part of this. We were all collectively Cleopatra, and every other Jesus, every other thing, that fantastical character that we made up, we've all been that. We are that. That's what we think we are. And so that's being beside the point. We've tried every option, and every single option that we've tried has not worked. And so we finally get to the point. It's like, when do you stop looking for a thing that you lost? When you find it. Uh-huh. You know, when I'm looking for that lost quarter and I find it, I stop looking for it. And you know, eureka. You know, we have found it. There must be a better way, and it's here. And so for me, this is my path. And everything that I see, hear, and think, when I'm thinking, you know, there's times when I'm just completely, totally ego and have no reflection on what I'm doing at all. But you know, more and more and more, I'm looking at my life and looking at what I'm thinking, looking at how I'm seeing things, and recognizing where it comes from, and recognizing that it is not what I am or what I want. And my brother is not the ego that I made up for him. It is not even a separate being from myself. You and I are not separate in any way at all. And
infinite compassion, isn't it? I mean, that's really where we're headed, is that infinite compassion that really embraces all being, and sees that the form of the existence in the space-time dream couldn't possibly be the real being, the all of spirit, that Gary's fearless love exercise of recognizing all of spirit and everything we see. You know, there's no way that ego's agenda could possibly bring that to our awareness. But we can use everything that ego tries to bring to our awareness, and instead of its prison, making it a prison, that's the intent of the ego, we make it a classroom by seeing that every thought that condemns or judges or criticizes or is irritated by or feels guilty about, you know, what this particular body is consuming or doing or not doing or whatever. You know, I love the lot of Susan Dugan's, maybe that's just where I first heard it, you know, the idea of the Holy Spirit saying, "So how's that working out for you?" You know, that that gentle but persistent, peaceful voice that just says, you know, we could drop this. We could drop this insane attempt. You know, we could use the Bob Newhart just to stop it approach and find the peace that we never left. It's been waiting there all along.
Yep. And you know, the more I do that, the more peaceful I become. And I see that it really works. And I have much more incentive to continue to do that. And I find less and less times of upset, less and less fear. You know, it just, I recognize that it really does work. So, you know, I don't see any reason to go anywhere else.
Yeah. It's less and less I in terms of the lowercase I, because we're slowly but surely learning to disidentify with the identity theft character that we made up, you know.
And there's symbols everywhere.
there are, aren't there? I mean, it's just, you know, the ego is a fraud and a joke. It's just a silly joke that we can afford to laugh at.
Yeah. And we can laugh. And that's the point.
Yes.
Finally to laugh. And when we finally laugh, it's over.
Yep.
All right. Thank you so much, Bruce Rawls.
Thank you, Lynn.
Enjoyable. I wanted to mention to everyone that Bruce is going to be doing a mini series with us starting on Sunday, April 17th, three Sundays in a row. And if you look on our schedule, you go to our website, look at our schedule, check them out. I think it's going to be really cool having Bruce here as a special teacher on Sunday evenings. That's 9 o'clock. And also starting tomorrow night, we have a mini series with Martha Creek. And I think that's going to be lovely as well. So we're just improving things more and more in the dream.
that's great. I'm looking forward to that as well. I'll try not to be too special. I'm sure we'll have fun. And also a couple other announcements that if we have a moment for that.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, there's also a retreat in Canyon City that's happening very, very soon. It's basically that's happening. Let me look up the dates here. This is the School for A Course in Miracles for people that are close to where you're at, Lynn, and the Pueblo, Colorado Springs area. That is happening May 1st through the 4th at the Franciscan Retreat Center in Colorado Springs, and you can go to the School for A Course in Miracles. I've also got a link to it and a short article on ACIMblog.com. And then also there's the Weekend of Freedom Retreat the next month in June 16th through the 18th. I'll be at that one. And that's in Estes Park on the other side of Denver. And so two upcoming events in the Colorado area you might want to check out if you happen to be in those neighborhoods. So I always try to put interesting stuff on ACIM blog and on the Facebook page. And I know you post a ton of great stuff as well, Lynn, and it's always a delight to discover what our global community is sharing and have fun with that. So thanks again, and we'll talk next week.
All right. Thank you, Bruce, and I love you. And I'm just going to put on a short meditation so that we can do a little bit of that before Ken comes on. So I'll talk to you next week, Bruce, and have a great week and happy spring.
Likewise. Thanks.
Bye-bye.